grind.
Alright, where are you going? Here, okay?
Grind.
Oh my god.
Not coming in, I figured it, man.
Good job, buddy.
The Hunt for Answers. The Ugly Pike Podcast.
All right, welcome back to the Ugly Pike Podcast on the Outdoor Journal Radio Podcast Network. Today's episode is brought to you by Canada's only specialized pike and muskie shop, Izoco. Head over to izocofishing.com and check out all the amazing hand-picked, top-quality gear they have to offer. This episode is also proudly brought to you by Angling Sports, based in London, Ontario, and serving customers throughout Canada and the northern U.S. With over 30 years of unmatched angler support, they offer top-tier fishing products catering to every skill level. Explore their offerings at anglingsports.ca and gear up for unparalleled fishing for an unparalleled fishing experience. So, Frank, I want to set the stage here with a little background. Back in episode 71 and 72, our guest today enlightened us on muskie fishing on the eastern coast of Canada, specifically New Brunswick. As the acting chairman of Muskies Canada St. John River chapter at the time, he played a real pivotal role in the success of muskie angling in that region. In our previous discussion, we delved into some of the major challenges the industry faced with government and community acceptance and the need for species protection. So I think today, Frank, you and I are both excited to get an up-to-date info, which is long overdue. And of course, we want to ask Mr. Marlin how we can still catch fat muskies on the St. John River. So, Marlin, welcome back to the show. Thanks for doing this again with us today.
Thanks for having me back, guys. Just want to say congrats on all the success you guys have had. You guys have really come a long way. I tune in every week and really, really enjoy the show. Next level stuff and only getting better every episode.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. Chris, how long has it taken? We've been talking about getting Marlin on for like a year.
Yeah, that's why I said long overdue, because when I went back and I'm like, what, 71 and 72? And we're at 163 now. So almost like 90 episodes later. And we've been in contact with Marlin like along the way. But I think it's actually good because it's a good time period. So much has happened since we last talked to him. And just from some of the points we touched on in the bios and stuff and the back and forth, there seems to be a lot of movement and action in the industry. So we're going to hear all about it today.
I think there's no question Marlin's star has risen. Our show has risen. You almost got eaten by a lion. So many things have changed in the last few months. So yeah. Definitely overdue. So there's so much to talk about, Chris. What do you think? Where do we start?
Well, I mean, we did go over in episode 71, 72, where Marlin came from. And you know, maybe we can touch on that again. I mean, are you still the acting chairman of the Muskies Canada chapter? And two, maybe talk a bit about that transition you had from, you were growing up, I believe, on the French River. You were a fly fisherman, and then you moved out east, and you basically were part of the whole development of that muskie industry there, and as we know it today. So maybe just give a quick refresh course on that for our listeners.
Sure thing. Not quite all accurate there. Oh, okay. So I'm currently past chair of the Muskies Canada chapter. Okay. And as in most chapters, past chair kind of acts as a consultant for the acting chair and the BOD members. You know, I think it was 7 years straight. I was on the BOD in some capacity. So I've certainly taken a little bit of a break, which I think is healthy for anyone, you know, on a BOD for that period of time. But the chapter's still very strong. We're still 70 members strong, still running 4 or 5 events a year, which is a little different than a lot of the chapters, just because we don't have the chance to get out to all the other events like in Ontario. So myself, I did grow up in Ontario. The French Rivers was definitely my stomping ground and where I cut my teeth fishing. I didn't, however, fly fish until I moved out east. Musky fish until I moved out east. That was... Geez, time flies, going back maybe 12 years ago now. And I picked up a fly rod. I got into fly fishing completely backwards for most people. I picked up a fly rod with the intentions of catching a muskie. So my first rod was a 10 weight.
I was, you know, in the middle of winter, I'd be in the driveway chucking these big giant flies around, learning how to cast, getting real weird looks from my neighbors. but since then, you know, I started as a part-time guide, I think 10 years ago. Last season was my first year as a full-time guide. You know, we've heard this story so many times, listen to your podcast, guys that gave up that cushy job in the corporate world to chase the dream. And I can say, you know, I wake up every morning more energized than ever, loving what I do, with a real drive to succeed and kind of take it to the next level. So I'm super happy.
Just to jump in, Marlon, is that guiding your fly fish guiding or any type of angling, any type of,
I guide for almost everything that swims in New Brunswick. Muskie is certainly, you know, it's kind of what I'm known for. And I'd say makes up the bulk of my schedule, but I get started on sturgeon fishing in mid to late March. That's, you know, soak and bait on the bottom. We do fly fishing for Atlantic salmon. I do that, April and May. Then kind of some filler stuff, some smallmouth, some sturgeon, some pickerel, a little bit of everything on fly or gear. And then, you know, June till around December is really musky time. And I do that fly or gear as well. A lot of trolling trips, jigging, casting, fly fishing. I have three boats to get onto different types of water. So, you name it, I kind of do it out here.
Okay. And last time we talked to you, you were a brand ambassador for like a long list of companies. Have you maintained that portion of your like?
Yeah, absolutely. Pure Fishing is the company I represent, and I couldn't be happier for a guy like me that does a little bit of everything. You know, they've really got the bases covered for me. Some of the stuff, and I'm sure a lot of guides the same during COVID. A lot of the Canadian. The Canadian guide programs just kind of shut down. So, you know, sunglasses, I got to get my own now. So I'm on Zenni for those.
Nice. Frank, any other questions about Marlon coming up in life related to his muskie passions? Or are we going to dive right into muskie talk? You still there?
I'm here. I don't know how to unmute myself. This is my first time doing the podcast. Sorry. I was just like, why won't Chris stop talking? Marlon, I want to know. Marlon, I want to know what your second favorite fish to guide is out there. Is it stripers?
I would probably say smallies on the fly.
Oh, wow.
Getting into like fast moving water. I've got two jet boats that I can get up into some really skinny water. I really love river fishing, even for muskies. It's almost two different sports compared to like trolling big water or even casting on the big water. Getting into that shallow, fast moving water. I don't know. There's just something fun about it. You know, a lot of times, especially on float trips, if you're in a raft or in a drift boat, you know, that spot goes by, and there's just less looking at screens, more just fishing. I don't know. I just find it's a lot of fun, and man, river fish fight like no other too. When you live your whole life, basically living on a treadmill, you know, those fish really got some power. And we're blessed in New Brunswick. You know, I just shot a show with the new fly fisher last summer that, just aired this weekend, and you know, the amount of quality fish we have out here, we may not have 7-8 pound smallmouth, but, you're also not in the middle of, you know, a great lake, with a tube down 30 feet, you're fishing current seams in 3-4 feet of water. So it's really a lot of fun.
You're talking to two guys who grew up fishing on the Niagara, right? So, talk about current. When you're in the lower, you're like, if I fall in here, I'm absolutely dead.
Yeah. That's wild.
Where we fish.
I watch videos on the Niagara all the time. It looks like a lot of fun to fish, and kind of a crapshoot what you're going to catch in there too, man. There's
everything
about multi-species.
Everything.
Yeah.
Plus, I mean, the Niagara is just insane. Chris, I'll never forget that time you made me trek down in the pouring rain, and then we realized the water was too high. And so we had to walk like, I don't know, 6 kilometers on rocks and slippery. Like I thought I was going to die that day. That was nuts.
That's why my wife was angry when I brought my kids for that hike. She knows what they're in for. But when they're kids, they don't care, right? Now they're probably, I don't know if they would enjoy it anymore. But yeah, they I mean, they're still kids, but when they were that young, they were just following their dad, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty treacherous down there. I mean, of course we fish the St. Lawrence too. So, you know, talk about river fish. Those fish get so fat, they're so strong, and just, it's a lot of fun. It's challenging to fish in a river, but there's something I like about it at the same time, you know?
Yeah, tell me about it. I mean, our fish are St. Lawrence strain fish, right? That was confirmed years ago. So on the St. John River, we're fishing St. Lawrence strain.
Marlon, tell me about guiding for the sturgeon. Why is that not your second favorite? I mean, pulling one of those things up must be like dealing with a dinosaur. Like, there's such a, like, the character of that fish, it's so prehistoric. It must be such an incredible moment to hold one of those.
I'll preface it by saying we are super lucky here to be able to fish for sturgeon. We're the only place in the world where you can target short-nosed sturgeon. It allows for an early season too. Like, when most of our water is still iced up, we're fishing that freshet, you know, so mid to late March, it's really the only game in town. And they are super, super cool. Like, I can't deny that, but I mean, soaking bait on the bottom, sitting and waiting. I guess the same could be said for trolling, or people will say the same thing about trolling. I think you guys know there's a lot more to trolling than that.
Yeah.
You know, and there is a game you got to play to get the sturgeon, and you know, you got to follow the bites and tides come into play, and fighting that freshet and icebergs and all that stuff. But so it's up there. I mean, it's something about, like I said, smallmouth. Though I my dad was a smallmouth junkie. That's where I grew up. What I grew up fishing was that topwater bite. So I just love that. But I don't think I could do anything like one single fish all year. I love the fact that I have these options. It's a totally different vibe. I get people ask me that all the time. Like, man, you like, how do you fish every day? And you know, that it's a totally different vibe drifting a river and swinging a fly for a muskie or a bass than it is trolling out in open water, or, you know, soaking bait for sturgeon. I just love it all. I love that it changes. You know, I love the four seasons we get here and being on the water for all of them.
Did you say iceberg?
Oh yeah, man. So like, we're literally fishing. Like I said, the river is just breaking up. Last year, actually, my dog coach, it was his first fishing, or second fishing trip ever. The first fishing trip, he was in a Rubbermaid and didn't even come out, like, just in a rubber. He was a puppy. But we just set our lines for sturgeon, and I mean, this current is sailing, and there's icebergs 2-3 times the size of your boat that are, you know, breaking off and scooting down river through that current. And coach is his name, named after the lure, Coach Dog. But he hopped off the boat and rode an iceberg, 300 meters downstream. So I had to pull anchor and go.
Oh my God. This is on the St. John.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh my God.
Just to follow up that, like, just, can you situate us generally, like the general location, like where, like, you know, we go from St. John's to Fredericton, the St. John, the river goes all the way up. And then where exactly are you, and can you fish in all this area, or you're just focus on one specific area?
I basically, after years and years of doing it, I've kind of got my schedule. The St. John River, I mean, it's the second longest river east of the Mississippi. I think the Susquehanna is the longest. So, I mean, this river runs from essentially almost Quebec City to St. John, New Brunswick, through the state of Maine. So sturgeon fishing, my spring sturgeon trips are down towards the Reversing Falls, which is pretty famous. That's like near the city of St. John. That's where I start my season.
Near the bottom.
Yeah.
Of the river,
yeah. So like I mentioned, the tides, it's really wild. You've got this massive, crazy spring freshet, huge current, logs and icebergs coming down one direction, coming out of the river, going to the ocean, and the Bay of Fundy tides, which are the highest in the world, will actually push that tide, the opposite direction and fill up the river. So that's why they call it the Reversing Falls, right in St. John. And really, like, there's rapids going out of the river for 12 hours. And then, you know, that'll go slack for an hour or two. And then it actually reverses the flow and pushes up the river.
That's cool.
Yeah, it is. It is pretty crazy. I had the opportunity to go fishing with a striper guide last summer. Not many boats are built to be able to go through those falls. So on Canada Day, I took a day off muskie and I went striper fishing with him, and it was insane. There's, you know, he knows it so well. Bruce English is his name. Shout out to him. He knows it so well. Like, there's spots that are only good for 5 minutes. He's like, there's a current seam right here that'll be set up, but you only have 5 minutes to hit it. The fish will be there for 5 minutes and then they're gone because it's just constantly changing every day.
That's crazy, man.
Frank, I don't know if you're thinking what I'm thinking, but like, how do the muskie like manage that type of current? Like, that must be just like a roller coaster for them, right? Like,
is it undulations?
There are no muskies that I know of down there. I think the salt content's a bit high because this is like the falls is right at the salt water.
Okay.
However, I've caught muskies in some pretty crazy white water. They can, they find those little slack water kind of highways down there, I call them, and almost just like a trout navigates through fast water. You know, they'll go and rest behind a rock, and then they find a spot that's prime for eating. And when they're in that stuff, I love fishing that stuff because you know they're in there to eat.
How far up does the tides penetrate the river then? Like, when you start fishing muskie, are you north of Fredericton?
People are fishing muskie in Fredericton, and I did for years. I still do a little bit down there. I focus more on the next system up. So there's a dam in between. We would call that zone two or the Mactaquac head pond. And up there, there's no tidal influence at all because of the dam. So as you get further up the system, you can see, you know, the current doesn't reverse, but you can still see the water come up and down a little bit. And I've certainly seen some fish movement that correlates to the tides. But then you're also closer to a dam, so you have that that release from the dam that will also turn on fish. So there's a lot going on, and as you mentioned, river fishing is tricky in a natural river. Then you add all these elements, and it can be, you know, there's a lot going on in your head, a lot to calculate.
We fish the Niagara River, like we said, and super fast currents. Like, it's just insane how fast this current is, and you know, we don't have much structure on this river. It's a gravelly bottom. So there's a guy named Jim Kenner. He's Jim K on YouTube. So if anybody goes there, you can see actually footage of the musk, because he dives and he takes footage. He's not a musky guy. He's just like likes to dive, likes to shoot footage. And it's a really good presentation on how these different species are interacting under the water. And the muskies are always behind like an undulation.
Sometimes it's not as it's not as defined as you might think. I mean, I've found patterns where fish are kind of, if you've ever flown over the St. John River on an airplane on a sunny day, you can actually see these waves in the sand, you know, and sometimes that's been the pattern. And it's like just kind of out in nondescript water, but there's just these small indentations in the sand, little current breaks that they'll sit behind. And sometimes that's the trick.
Yeah. Especially we don't have rocks. I mean, it's not.
Yeah. Same. It sounds a lot like the lower St. John, where there's it's kind of sand, gravel bottom, not a ton of structure out there. It can be testing for sure to figure out what those fish are doing.
Do you jig fish down there at all?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I jig fish quite a bit. It's a big part of my program.
What do you use when you jig out there?
I mean, Bondies are a go-to.
Yeah.
Tubes are great. It took me a while to get on the tube train. I just, you know, I'd look at them and just go, what do they think this is? So any kind of tube, St. John.
SJR.
Yeah. SJR jigging baits, Mark Brunskill from New Brunswick. I mean, these things are tailor-made.
I love them.
Yeah, he basically took his love for Bondies, and you know, he's fishing the same stuff I am. He's fishing this current, and they're killer for sure.
Yeah, he gave me one. I really enjoy using it. They look great. They're nice and heavy. They get down in the current. Really, really cool.
And I think I also do a lot of playing around with adding weighted leaders. Those chaos pucks that you can add, at baits. I can't remember the fella's name. I know he was fishing Nipissing, I think, with you guys,
Nico?
Or won the tournament up there. And some days that's just, I've always been that way. I've always been super impatient. Like I want my bait on the bottom now. Sometimes the fish want that slower fall and you got to fine tune it a little bit. Yeah. But a lot of times getting down, you know, kicking up some dust. I think that even calls fish in too.
Right. Yeah, you're thinking of Dave Gray. The Dave Gray episode. Graham was the guy who won it, but that was the winning boat. Yeah, Chris.
Frank, it sounds consistent with what we're doing on the Niagara, where we drop that jig right to the bottom, and we use the drift to just pull that thing along the bottom. I'm not sure if you're going that deep. I don't know how deep it is where you're fishing, but I mean that's a technique we're using on the Niagara that.
We're kicking up dust too. We're kicking up tons of dust because we're literally dragging our bait through the gravel, right? Yeah. And so, like, there's two schools of thought from the Red October guys, and you know, Hans likes to pop the bait, and Josh Ketchery likes to just drag it through. But they're both, you know, one bounces off the bottom, so we're definitely kicking up dust and making a ruckus. I should add, and I said before this, I wasn't going to talk about the Chicago show. We'll talk about it in another episode, but I think a lot of people are either discovering, well, it's germane right now because a lot of people are discovering or rediscovering the tube bait, and nothing was more apparent than that when I was sitting in the Red October booth and the show opened and it was like a freaking Beatles concert, the amount of people who were running to the booth and just taking armfuls of bait. So I'll talk about that on a subsequent episode, but there's definitely been some sort of rediscovery, reemergence of the tube. So
they're so versatile, and there's so many ways you can customize them, adding blades, tails, weighting them differently. I've even messed around with like a chatterbait blade in front of it to get some vibration down there while I'm jigging.
Not to mention they're cost effective and they're easy on the arm, right? Like when you're throwing blades all day, man, like your arm and your shoulders suffer. These are good rest.
Yeah. And that's what when I was at the booth, that's what I told people. I, you know, when people are like, well, I don't use one. I'm like, listen, you got to have a few in the boat because if for any other reason, you're ripping blades and you're just dying after, you know, 3-4 hours, whatever that is, put one of these on and either just drift down, pop them, you know, put your feet up or just give them nice long sweeps and just relax. They move through the water with very minimal resistance, and that tail, that skirt will do a lot of the attracting the fish for you. Or like Marlon said, put a blade on there, just do what you want, customize it and have fun with it. That's another really cool thing about those baits.
Do you know the name of Canada's one and only specialized pike and muskie shop? It's Izoco, and it's an Esox angler's paradise, offering the very best in hand-picked, top-quality gear, from bait casting to fly fishing, and even specialized Scandinavian tackle. Izoco's staff will provide expert advice and top-quality service. But Izoco is more than just a store. It's a community of passionate anglers that make up the Izoco tribe, and they're always ready to share tips, swap stories. So head over to their shop in person or online at izocofishing.com and let Izoco turn those fishing trips into epic stories.
Hi, everybody. I'm Angelo Viola.
And I'm Pete Bowman.
Now, you might know us as the hosts of Canada's favorite fishing show, but now we're hosting a podcast.
That's right. Every Thursday, Ange and I will be right here in your ears, bringing you a brand new episode of Outdoor Journal Radio.
Now, what are we going to talk about for 2 hours every week?
Well, you know there's going to be a lot of fishing.
I knew exactly where those fish were going to be and how to catch them, and they were easy to catch.
Yeah, but it's not just a fishing show. We're going to be talking to people from all facets of the outdoors, from athletes.
All the other guys would go golfing. Me and Garth and Turk and all the Russians would go fishing.
To scientists.
But now that we're reforesting and letting things free, it's the perfect transmission environment for Lyme disease.
To chefs.
If any game isn't cooked properly,
marinated,
or you will taste it.
And whoever else will pick up the phone.
Wherever you are, Outdoor Journal Radio seeks to answer the questions and tell the stories of all those who enjoy being outside.
Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
No matter what species you love to target, from boot to headlamp, Angling Sports has what you need. Their store is massive, and it's just loaded with equipment and apparel. So if you love to go after those big toothy critters like we do, it's a one-stop shop for all pike and muskie tackle. Whether you're looking for trolling rods or casting reels, Angling Sports is always adding the latest and best industry offerings from entry level to higher end. Looking for custom muskie baits? They got them. It's worth the drive to London, so check out their amazing store in person or online by visiting anglingsports.ca and net that PB in style.
So I think, Marlon, last time we talked to you, from then till now, there's been a bit of a shift in the muskie community or muskie industry in your area. And you mentioned in some of the talking points that, you know, one of those factors was COVID. Can you explain how that has had some sort of influence or contributed to like an increased muskie activity or muskie population, or what exactly was the effect of that?
So, I think everywhere saw an increase in people getting back into fishing, or people just getting into fishing during COVID. We didn't have any sort of rules or regulations that kept us off the water. So it was kind of the perfect storm for a lot of people to discover what they had in their backyard. I've certainly been a big part of the promotion out in New Brunswick. But how long can people keep seeing these 30, 40, even 50 pound fish being caught right in their backyard and not want to give it a try? I think another thing that led to that in New Brunswick was the striped bass fishery. Muskie's certainly a specialized fish, specialized gear. But if there's one other fish where that kind of lends itself to, the using the same kind of gear, it's striped bass. So our striper population is really booming out here. A lot of people are out fishing stripers. Boat sales increased during COVID, gear sales increased during COVID, and certainly seeing more people out on the water and, fishing for muskies during COVID as well.
Yeah, that was the period when, people were begging for boats, like literally just throw a number out there. Yeah. If you're selling it, mm-hmm. and people would be like, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody had tons of government money and tons of time on their hands. Right. So
I was lucky. I think it was not last season, the year before, things were just starting to catch up. We don't have, the boat dealerships like you guys do in Ontario out here, but my 90 blew up. Actually, I was guiding Frank Thurston the next day, and I drove from Thirsty Baits. I was very lucky. My 90 blew up. I sent it to the shop, and I had to drive to Halifax, which was, I think, a 5-hour drive one way. Get the new motor, throw it in the back of the pickup truck. Hitch the boat on at like 4 a.m. And, luckily, a buddy works at a dealership where he had a forklift. So we got the new motor put on at 6 a.m. and I was out on the water for like 8:39 to break it in and pick up Frank and still get out on the water. But I was lucky there was a motor available at that point, or my season would have been over.
That's cool. Did Frank come out there just to fish with you?
Yeah, Frank's daughter lives in Nova Scotia, so he's come out, and nice. We usually do a camping trip every summer.
Oh, cool.
Get his daughter on some muskies, trying to just have some fun. Frank loves his barbecue, so he's always welcome at camp. Awesome guy. But yeah, he always does some ribs up, and we kind of, it's lighthearted fishing. It's not grinding. It's just having fun and kind of enjoying camping and everything at the same time.
That's cool. I've met him a few times just kind of casually, I think at the Odyssey, and seems like a real interesting guy. Anybody else come out there from around here, from Ontario, to see you?
Yeah, there's a list of names. It's really cool to it was a few years ago, probably 5-6 years ago. When I started this guiding thing, I was part-time, and most of my clients were last-minute bookings, or they were here doing something else. And I can remember I had a guy in from BC, British Columbia, and he, I asked him, I'm like, oh, so what brings you to town? And he's like, you, this. It blew my mind that, wow. I'm like, okay, this is something, right? Like there's people flying here, getting rooms. And awesome. That's only increased since then.
So yeah, I've got quite a few anglers out that were either recommended by other guide services as well. You know, Ottawa Muskie Factory, they've done well in promoting me, and I've had guys from that have fished with John that come out and say, yeah, he said you got to go check out the East Coast. So it's really cool to see muskie anglers coming out to experience what we have out here. You know, even guys from some pretty fabled waters, guys, you know, St. Lawrence guys that are going like, you know, maybe I don't have a chance at a 57 on the St. John River, but I just want to come see what it's all about. And you guys have some cool fish, some cool scenery. And I mean, just being on the East Coast is fun in itself.
So yeah. Marlon, you're talking about anglers coming to fish out there, but you mentioned also there was an uptick in just like transplants, people moving across the country to live in the area. And that has also translated into more boats on water. Like a lot of them have been spending their time fishing as part of their pastimes. And so you've noticed an increase activity or pressure on the water.
Absolutely. You know, that was certainly a trend during COVID, or that trend is continuing. Our housing market in New Brunswick has definitely taken a big jump. You know, a lot of boomers that were looking at it like, hey, I could sell my house in Ontario, basically retire early, you know, but buying a house in New Brunswick for a lot less. And of course, they bring that fishing culture with them. So we've seen a lot of that. To me, it keeps things interesting. You know, I could sit here and complain about the pressure, but, you know, I think that was inevitable. You know, we've got a super fishery out here. Yeah. The fish have handled it really well. I've certainly had to change my game plan, do a little bit more exploring. But what fun would it be if I was just going to the same spots all the time, running the same patterns all the time? I think fish change naturally too. So yeah, it keeps you on your toes a little bit. I kind of watch a little more what boats were where this weekend. And I try to fish weekdays a little bit more than I used to. But all in all, you know, success rate has been there. We continue to see a really strong population of muskies, a strong spawn. So no real complaints about it.
Marlon, do you think that the fish will eventually get up into the upper 50-inch class, or is it a strain thing?
I'm not sure. We confirmed they are a St. Lawrence strain fish.
Yeah.
You know, we've kind of seen the same trend though. We see our bigger fish being in that upper 40s to, you know, the odd 50 incher caught, but anything here 46 inches and above, I would say can carry 35, 40 pounds.
Right.
Most of the 40 pound plus fish I've got were sub 50 inch.
That's because of the girth. You talked about the girth last episode. Yeah. They're just fat fish.
Yeah. There was a release journal, a Muskies Canada release journal done years ago. Peter Levick was just blown away when he came out here, and the title of the episode in big writing on the cover is "The Fattest Muskies in the World." You know, our August fish, I've caught 48, 26, 27 girths in August. You know, these fish come off the spawn and they've got to see, I guess that's the big difference where like you look at places like Minnesota and you hear about these Cisco runs that come in, you know, late season, everyone on Mille Lacs is trying to get that bite at the end of the season. Our version of Cisco's are the blueback herrings and the Gaspereau or alewife. They run in June, July. So these fish come off their spawn, you know, they hang out shallow for a little bit, but then they're hitting that open water to eat, you know, those herring and the alewife. And, you know, these are fatty, oily ocean run fish. So these fish, our muskies put the pounds on real quick.
That's really interesting. It's the total opposite out here, right? We're chasing those late season fish for that reason. And my God, a 27 inch girth is a fat, fat fish, especially at 40 something inches.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I've had guys come out. I had a guy, this was years ago, so I can't remember his name. I apologize, but I know Pete Maina is his neighbor. He lives on the same lake as Pete Maina. Yeah. And he got a ridiculous summer fish. It was only like a 38 incher, but it had like a 22 inch girth or something.
So it was like a circle.
It came into the net and he goes, that's not a muskie. Like, he's like, that's not a muskie. I don't, what is this? Right. They like, almost look like a different species sometimes.
It's like one of those sunfish you see like in the Boston Harbor in Gloucester or something like that.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
So back to what we were talking about. My personal theory is that, you know, I actually think these fish might be eating themselves to an early death. You know, because they're kind of the same as a morbidly obese human. Mm. You know, there was a 61-pound fish found by and confirmed by a DNR officer, Steve Eldridge. He was actually our chapter president at one point, but he was on duty at the time, and he found this fish, took it to Canada Post, got it weighed on a certified scale, and they actually sent that fish to Ottawa, and they did studies on it, and they confirmed that fish, there was a flood in the river, there was so much sediment in the water was all churned up, and they basically said that its gills could not produce enough oxygen for its body, so it asphyxiated. It died. When the fella found it, it was kind of half swimming around, like bumping into the shoreline, and it was still breathing, but it was breathing its last breaths. So if that's any indication, you know, I kind of think that's what could be happening, is some of these fish just don't live that long life and don't get to that 50-plus length because they're just dying early.
That's so weird. Like, I can't believe that. And like, I think about the fishing I did in the Buffalo Harbor this year, and there is so much to eat in that, like, especially after the strong westerly winds come and everything gets pushed into the tip of Lake Erie. And I mean, there's shad and there's, you know, there's Cisco. It's just littered on the graph. And, you know, Hans Mann caught that giant fish last year, and it looks like it's almost deformed, right?
Yeah. When I was at my first Odyssey, I think it was Cullen from Muskie Candies. He that's the first thing he said. He goes, "You're out east." He goes, "Your fish look like Buffalo Harbor fish." It's super low density on Buffalo Harbor, though, isn't it?
Oh, it's crazy low density. But yeah. I've never heard anybody say that those fish are eating themselves to death. They just get fat, and they're not super long either, right? Like you'll get them in the low 50s here and there, but
it could just be a strain thing. My thoughts are also, I mean, this whole population originated from, I think, two stocking programs on Lac Frontier in just outside of Quebec City. So I mean, you're talking about this huge river, a very viable population of muskies. I mean, it's a very healthy population. It originated from probably 10,000 fish. So maybe that has something to do with it too.
And you think as the fishing increases, like the pressure increases, and then the area for where you fish muskie starts to grow, then you're going to obviously encounter fish muskie in areas you never caught them before. So who knows what's in those areas?
That's true. The other thing about the St. John that most people don't realize is, you know, a lot of this head pond area where the muskies have kind of, a lot of the bigger muskies have come out of, we're talking like depths of 80, 90, 100 feet, just huge open water stretches. There's one stretch that's probably like 70, 80 kilometers long with zero structure. Most of it, like I said, is right off the banks. There's like, you know, a 20, 30 foot section, and then it just drops right off to pure open water, 100 feet deep. There's probably some giants out there. I personally think because there's no thermocline, there's oxygen all the way through. The dam pulls from around 60 feet. I think there's some deep water fish out there that have probably never seen the light of day. And, I don't know. I wrestle with the idea of targeting fish in those depths. That's actually something I'd love to see Muskies Canada in our chapter here work on is some barrel trauma studies. That's a rabbit hole, though. You could go on forever about that.
Yeah. And everybody's got a different opinion.
I'd like to see a study done, because right now it's all just opinions. You know, I do carry a release tool. It's called a Sequalizer. I do carry that in my boat because, hey, sometimes you've only got your bait down 15, 20 feet, but you can't stop a fish coming from those depths. And I have seen barrel trauma, the effects when I'm releasing fish.
Yeah. It's It's contentious. It's just like fishing in hot weather. You know, everybody's got a different opinion. I remember Chris at the Odyssey a few years back when they had the power panel, and you know, a bunch of the anglers in the power panel were saying, "Yeah, no, this is my cutoff time. This is my cutoff time." And then Jim Sarek just said, "Yeah, I don't care. I just fish in all weather. I don't care if it's hot." So
I've heard both. I mean, I like to refer to the science. And I can certainly say my experience is no matter, you know, I do have my cutoff in the 80s, but I'm not, you know, I'm not scared of that 80 degree number on the sonar. I have prefaced trips by telling clients, we're not taking a fish out of the water today. It's, you know, if you want a picture, you can get down on the side of the boat as we're popping the hooks type of thing.
Yeah.
All the science I've read, all the biologists I've heard on that topic have said the same thing. Do not take them out of the water. I can say from the years I've spent on the water and the hundreds and hundreds of muskies I've released, if I pop hooks on the side of the boat, not one has even hesitated for a second to swim away.
Yeah, that's cool. And I don't think it can be disputed. Even for me, I know that, you know, the toughest fish I ever had to revive was in a warm water, you know, sunny season. I was with my buddy Alex, Rex St. Pierre from Barbarian Braid. And you know what? We were fishing all day. We got nothing. We saw a guy across the bay where we were pull a fish in. He takes off. Okay. So, of course, we go over to the spot he was fishing. We nail a beautiful fish. It was big. And, you know, the bite was on. It was like just about golden hour just before. And we knew the bite was on, and we get this fish. You know, we just saw that guy catch a fish, and we're like, okay, there's a window open. All right, let's release this fish. And, like, we push it off, and we see the fins on the top of the water, and we're like, ah. So we go back to it. Basically, we did that for a half hour. The fish ended up going down to the bottom, a successful release, and we missed the entire window. But you know what? At the end of the day, we did the right thing by the fish.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and there's no way we were going to let that fish, any harm come to that fish. So – you know, put the boat in. We just got the oxygen moving in the fish and made sure that she got to the bottom. But that was a really, really tough go, touch and go for a little while. But probably shouldn't have took it out of the water. You're right.
I get that missing the window, because I've told client, you know, I have a lot of first time musky fishermen on my boat.
Yeah.
So I know they want that picture of that first fish. But if it's in the 30s or something like that, and I know that window's open, I'm like, you know, I want them to enjoy that fish. I want them to soak up that moment. But, you know, as a guide, I'm like, we got to go. Like, let's get them back in the water and let's get those, you know, let's get back at it because the window's open.
And the real peak, Marlon, like the real peak of the summer where you're like, we had a window this summer where we're hitting like 35, 38 with like just crazy hot temperatures. Then we just avoid those peak hours on the water and try to go early morning, late afternoon, where the temperature drops almost like 5 to 7 degrees from the middle of the day. Right. So that's how we would like try to mitigate that crazy heat wave we would have in the summer. Because as you said, people are coming out to like they paid prepaid. They got you booked. They're coming to meet with you. Everything is arranged, and then they can't help when they get there. It's the hottest day of the year. So you got to try to find a way around it.
Not many people want to fish in that stuff anyway, you know, you can, we're very lucky here again. Like, there's only one river, but there's so many stretches of river and sections of river that are totally different. We've got tailwaters where, again, you're pulling from lower in the system and it's oxygenated water. It's up to 5-6 degrees, sometimes cooler than you know what's above or below it. So you can target those areas. We do have night fishing opportunities. There's ways around it. There's ways around it for sure. So I've never had to just stop musky fishing completely. Maybe just stop fishing them in a certain area or at a certain time, like you said.
Hey everybody, thanks for listening. That was part one with Marlon Prince. Always great to reconnect with Marlon, and hope you liked it. Stay tuned. Next week we'll drop part two for everybody. And it was just a great discussion. Until then, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you consume your podcast information. Chris and I would really appreciate it. Also, If you are a business owner, small business, large business, giant business, tiny business, bait maker, anything, we have sponsorship packages for you that will reach a ton of anglers in the muskie and multi-species community. So reach out over social media or find us through our website, and we'll be happy to send you our deck. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for part two dropping next Friday.
A small-town sheet metal mechanic come to build one of Canada's most iconic fishing lodges? I'm your host, Steve Nidzwicki, and you'll find out about that and a whole lot more on the Outdoor Journal Radio Network's newest podcast, Diaries of a Lodge Owner. But this podcast will be more than that. Every week on Diaries of a Lodge Owner, I'm going to introduce you to a ton of great people, share their stories of our trials, tribulations, and inspirations. Learn and have plenty of laughs along the way.
Meanwhile, we're sitting there bobbing along, trying to figure out how to catch a bass. And we both decided one day we were going to be on television doing a fishing show.
My hands get sore a little bit when I'm reeling in all those bass in the summertime, but that's might be for more fishing than it was punching.
You so confidently, you said, "Hey, Pat, have you ever eaten a drum?"
Find Diaries of a Lodge Owner now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Do you know the name of Canada's one and only specialized pike and muskie shop? It's Izoco, and it's an Esox angler's paradise, offering the very best in hand-picked, top-quality gear from bait casting to fly fishing, and even specialized Scandinavian tackle. Izoco's staff will provide expert advice and top-quality service. But Izoco's more than just a store. It's a community of passionate anglers that make up the Izoco tribe, and they're always ready to share tips, swap stories. So head over to their shop in person or online at izocofishing.com and let Izoco turn those fishing trips into epic stories. No matter what species you love to target, from boot to headlamp, Angling Sports has what you need. Their store is massive, and it's just loaded with equipment and apparel. So if you love to go after those big toothy critters like we do, it's a one-stop shop for all pike and muskie tackle. Whether you're looking for trolling rods or casting reels, Angling Sports is always adding the latest and best industry offerings from entry level to higher end. Looking for custom muskie baits? They got them. It's worth the drive to London, so check out their amazing store in person or online by visiting anglingsports.ca and net that PB in style. Do you know the name of Canada's one and only specialized pike and muskie shop? It's Izoco, and it's an Esox angler's paradise, offering the very best in hand-picked, top-quality gear, from bait casting to fly fishing, and even specialized Scandinavian tackle. Izoco's staff will provide expert advice and top-quality service. But Izoco's more than just a store. It's a community of passionate anglers that make up the Izoco tribe, and they're always ready to share tips, swap stories. So head over to their shop in person or online at izocofishing.com and let Izoco turn those fishing trips into epic stories.